all about the pendants, baby.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Excuse me. I believe you have my stapler.
Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
Hello and welcome. This is User Friendly. I am your host, Bill Sickens. We've got quite a show for you today. We've got our news segment and some interesting things to talk about there. We've got a very special guest today. The Real Word Sound, going to be coming on the phone telling us about his craft and what nerdcore rap is, which was a new thing to me, but it sounds like something that is out there, and he is an absolute genius when it comes to this. I'm going to talk a little bit about his art. We've got a game review today from Bill Snodgrass. He's going to be talking about some retro games that are coming out for the PS4 and the PC. Old style, new design. So we'll see what he thinks of that. Our own Mr. Movie is going to be on today reviewing Guardians of the Galaxy 2. We're going to see if they have actually come out with something that's a good sequel or saving the galaxy again or something that flops on the big screen. See what Gary has to say about that. In addition to that, we of course have our news segment and some other things, so stick with us. We'll be back after the break, user-friendly. And before we go, remember to check us out online, oneuserfriendly.com on Twitter, oneuserfriendly.com on Facebook. There's other user-friendlies, but we're number one. Also, our new website for the season, userfriendlyshow.com. There's a lot of stuff you can do there. Our season one podcasts are up. Check it out. See where it all came from 4 years ago. Also, listen to the shows now. Submit your story ideas. Let us know what you want to hear. Userfriendlyshow.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is User Friendly. Joining me are my co-hosts, Jeremy and Gretchen. Hello and welcome.
Hello.
Hi there.
So, Gretchen, what do we have in the news today?
Well, it looks like this week we have some interesting stories. There's a big Google hack story with Google Docs. And then we have some other items concerning Qualcomm and the iPhones. And then later on, we also have something concerning Google Earth.
So let's start with the Google hack.
Yeah.
So this is also known as Gone Fishing, with a P. actually, you know, Google has had a very good track record, and this wasn't exactly a hack of their systems in the way that we've seen it with some other things. But what it is a new play on an old scam, and it's an old scam that's used because it works well. And what it's designed to do is to get you to part with your personal information. It out there for identity theft and some of these other things. And what actually happened is that Google has a number of different applications that you can get through their system. One of them is called Google Docs. And what they've done is the bad guys have sent out an email, and in the email there's an attachment, and it says to open this Google Docs file. This is just like in previous years where you got something that was open the Word document or an attachment of some sort like that. And when you open the file, it goes in and is able to install malicious software on your computer or malware or bring you to another place to try to ask for your personal information and trick you into sending it out. Now, phishing emails, which is what this is, there's a number of different ways that they throw this out at you to try to trick you and fool you into responding to them. One of the most common ways and one of the best ways to protect yourself is to watch for these type of things. And they play on the fact that we all get busy and don't really take the time to actually completely read through everything. Oh, here's an email. Oh, what's this attachment? And you get on with the day and then you click on it and you've got a problem. First thing that you can do when you're reading through the email is if there's a link. Let's say that one of the most common ways to use this as an example is one that may look to come from your bank or a service like PayPal or eBay or something. And you look in the email and it says, click here to log on to your account. If you don't update your information immediately, your account's going to be locked out, something like that. Usually it's a play on that. One of the first things to look for is the grammar of the email. The big companies, people that actually sit and go through and grammar check and all of that type
of thing.
They have
professionals who write this stuff up.
Right. And you'll commonly see misspelled words or things that just doesn't sound right. It's one of the first clues that there might be something wrong with the message. The second thing you can do is to move your mouse over the link that it wants you to click on. Don't actually click, just move the pointer over. And what will happen is it's going to pop up a bubble above it that tells you where the link actually goes to. So if that link says that it goes to www.mybank.com, but what actually pops up is I'm going to go to a website in some other country and this isn't your bank, or a variation thereof, then you know that that's not something to use. And then at that point, it's a good idea to close the email. And then go on and go to your financial institution's website or the PayPal or whatever the link purported to be for. Actually manually go to their website and then log in there. And then you know that you have the correct one, and then you can check with their customer service to see if there's really a problem.
Yeah, I've even turned in stuff in the past to, like, I don't remember which bank was it, Washington Mutual or Wells Fargo or something like that, and they were really happy to hear about it.
Yeah, they will go through and try to get these things shut down. I know there's some standard email addresses. You can get them from your institutions. As a, for example, PayPal, if you forward the message to spoof@paypal.com, then they'll be able to deal with it and tell you if it was real or not. And most organizations, big companies, have a setup like that to be able to deal with these type of things. Now, let's say that you got the email and you accidentally clicked on the link or you started to supply personal information or something of that nature.
Uh-oh.
What do you do? Now, there's a couple of things you can do. First and foremost is, again, to go in your browser, go to your institution, go change your password. That's first and foremost the biggest thing, because if your password's gotten out, they're going to try to use it pretty much immediately. And if you have provided personal information and are concerned about identity theft, the three credit bureaus have a way to report to them that there's a potential of fraud, and they put an alert on your credit account. That's another thing you consider doing in this type of a situation. One of the other things, which is your first line of defense on this type of attack, which is really what it is your antivirus and anti-malware software. And it's very important to make sure those things are up to date. And one of the other things that is, if you're like me, leave the computer on. It goes to sleep when you're done with it. It's faster to bring it up that way and makes life a little bit easier. But it is important to reboot the computer once in a while. This will allow it to go through and reload everything, check for updates and that type of a thing, and just keep a fresh copy of the operating system loaded. Again, little techniques, but things that can help out a lot in defending you from actually having the bad guys get to your information.
Yeah, that saves you a whole lot of heartache.
Yeah, and it's just, these things can be really, really a pain in the neck, and you want to try to avoid it. But if it has happened, just go through these things, and it's a very good way to approach it. And if you're really concerned, get a hold of your financial institution or whatever organization you think that the information's gotten out for. You can just call them on the phone, and they will have people there that are able to help you.
Sounds like good advice. Hey, Jeremy, tell us more about this Qualcomm iPhone thing.
Well, apparently, Qualcomm may seek an import ban on iPhones into the U.S. It has something to do with the legal trade fight with Apple over licensing fees, and they may be turning to the U.S. International Trade Commission.
Hmm.
So would this be a further delay on the new iPhone that's coming out this fall?
I would think so, yes. Because if they increase the, escalate their legal battle with Apple, and we've got a problem with the International Trade Commission not bringing them in, but then, yeah, there's going to be a severe delay.
You know, it's interesting. This year, last year, Samsung, of course, had a lot of problems. Their products were on fire, literally. And not a good thing, you know. And this year, it seems like Apple's having some difficulties in other ways. Now, this is totally a rumor, but if it turns out to be fact, you heard it here first. And if it turns out not to be, well, it was a rumor. We've been hearing that there is a known two-month delay already on the release of the new version of the iPhone. So it's not going to be at its normal time at the end of the summer. But there's some talk now that it may not even come out this year. And where that comes from is the companies that manufacture the packing materials and the boxes and things that the iPhone comes in, they have not placed their orders yet. There's still things that are out there and just kind of pending. New versions of the iPhone 7, looks like that's going to be out right on time. But the new one, and there are some incredible features that they're talking about, so we do want to see it. But it looks like we may not even have it in time for the holiday season. So we'll keep you updated on that. Just a little aside there. So what else do we have?
Well, the final thing, which I think sounds like it could be kind of cool, is your information about Google Earth and what it's been up to.
So Google Earth is a product for anybody that hasn't used it that allows you to look at satellite and street images basically anywhere in the world. And over the past however many years that's been out, I think it's probably been about 12 years, maybe a little bit longer, Google has actually literally driven everywhere they can legally drive and taken pictures. So you have Street View. It's actually quite an interesting piece of software. And it's
there's actually a couple of people who've been paid to hike some trails with a Google backpack that takes photos.
So it actually goes beyond
trail walk.
Goes beyond the roads. So there's a way that I can avoid getting exercise. Anyway,
you know, I've had a lot of fun with the Google Earth. I was writing a story that was placed in Canada, and I wanted to know what that particular region of Canada looked like. And so I went to Google Earth and did the street view and just pretended to drive around, and it really helped out.
No, it's incredible. I was actually using it with my VR gear, and back when we were going to cover the presidential election, the inauguration a few months ago, drove around. I had never been to D.C., so it was interesting to see some of the sites that we wanted to look at. The things like where the hotel was, figure out how to get from the airport, and short of accidentally virtually falling off the on-ramp to the freeway one time, it actually really helped out to be able to see this. And so what they're doing now is they're going double down on that and actually adding a new feature to where you can have these excursions through Google Earth. So there's like one that's for the Rocky Mountains and takes you to all kinds of different places there. And can't get out on your vacation this summer, it's a way to at least do something. But if you are going on vacation, it's a way to look and see what's around where you're going and see the sites that you actually do want to see, so that while you're there, you already know basically what you want to look at.
Amazing how that could be a lot of fun for someone who cannot travel.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And being able to access things that you wouldn't ordinarily be able to see. Google Earth will allow you to do that, and it is very much firsthand. And if you haven't tried it, give it a try. Earth.google.com is the download link for that. It is completely free and definitely, in my opinion, worth a shot.
So you can virtually visit anywhere?
Anywhere that they have been able to get pictures of. There are some parts of the world, of course, that that they don't have. Some of the areas that are at war right now and some things like that. But outside of that area, pretty much everything that's on there. They even have some features now where you'll be walking down a street in the street view, and you'll see a door to a building is open, and you can actually walk in and take a virtual tour of that building in some cases.
Really?
That's intense.
So they have they're really, every day they're adding new content to it. So it is, it's an incredible product. Even if you've seen it before and haven't in a little while, it's worth taking a look at again.
Well, that sounds great.
All right, we're going to come back with our interviews and our movie reviews. There's a lot of great stuff coming up. This is User-Friendly. Remember, we're number one user-friendly on Twitter, one user-friendly on Facebook, userfriendlyshow.com. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll be back after the break.
Chaz Wellington, our reporter and commentator from Las Vegas, is with us on the show today. Welcome, Chaz.
Thank you, Bill. Glad to be here.
I know it's been a while since you've been on the show, and it's been a while since we've had our one-hour format. So I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about your background and some of the things that you're going to be covering for us.
Yes, I'm a United States Army veteran, 22 years in the hospitality industry, 5 years in technology. Originally from Detroit, Michigan, lived in Vegas for 8 years, and I'll be covering many things in Vegas concerning technology, hopefully to have some peripheral stuff coming in, but just glad to be here, Bill.
Now, I understand that you just completed or are in the process of completing a major certification on security. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I completed my Security Plus certification back in 2016. And I'm currently completing a course for my CISA and studying also for my CCNA. So I'll be completing those within the end of the year.
Well, that sounds great. I'd love to have you on. I know our listeners would love to hear about that. We have a lot of people that are working in the technology center, and I'm doing my Amazon certification, Amazon Web Services, as we're speaking as well. So maybe we can look at doing a show about certifications and what was easy and what was not so easy, which will probably be most of it if it's anything like mine. So
yeah, I hear you. I would love to get that information out to help them with their exam.
Well, Chaz, listen, we look forward to having you on the show. It's looking like it's going to be a very good year. So I understand that you had a chance to go to the Channels Conference in Las Vegas. What is the Partners Channels Conference?
Oh, phenomenal. Well, Bill, this event marked Channel Partners' 20th anniversary. The Channel Partners Conference and Expo is an event in which over 6,000 industry experts, agents, VARs, MSPs, integrators, and service providers converge to share ideas and drive discussion on the topics that shape the industry. This actually included over 100 industry-leading speakers, 275 exhibitors, 5,500 partners and suppliers. It was amazing. With this power behind the conference and expo, their tagline, "Where ideas get real," really came to life.
Well, it absolutely sounds of it. So what kind of industry experts were you able to meet?
Now, there was a plethora of opportunities during the event in which industry experts were accessible, including Joe Peterson, VP Cloud Services with Clarify 360. There was Shane Stark, Director of Vendor and Channel Relations with Carrier Access Incorporated. And I believe David DeCanillis, VP of Sales and Marketing with Platte River Networks. But that was just three of 100 that you had access to. You could speak to them openly, network, and, you know, do business.
It sounds like there's a lot of different opportunities. What primary areas does the conference cover?
The primary areas covered in the conference were cloud services, of course, the integration of the Internet of Things with the infrastructure of businesses, marketing in today's world, customer dynamics, and next-gen tech.
Now, the big question I have for you, you were there for a couple of days. Did you consider it worthwhile?
Absolutely, Bill. The keynote speakers, the education track, the networking alone gave this conference an amazing burst of invaluable learning and business opportunities, not to mention the opportunity to network with such fascinating people. It was an event that I will continue to go to on an annual basis.
So I know when I've gone to conventions and different things like this, conferences and stuff, there's the part of it that we all talk about for the public, and then there's some behind the scenes stuff, if I can talk this morning. What kind of events did they actually offer beyond the conference?
Oh, this is really exciting. You know, I mentioned many things before that the conference entailed, but in addition to this, there were opportunities to conduct business in professional settings outside of the hustle and bustle. There were various award ceremonies. There were areas to expose clients to products with hands-on experience. There were many great events, you know, especially the first-time attendee event, which was held in the 1923 Bourbon Bar, which is a fascinating bar.
Wow.
And it was an open bar. It was fascinating people, drinks, business, and just a great time. And the continuing events were held in such places like the Foundation Room.
That sounds absolutely incredible. Sounds like a way to not only do the conference, but enjoy some of the sights of Vegas a little bit. If you had to sum it up, what one thing would you say that you took away from the conference and found valuable?
I would say the flow of the conference, the events that were, integrated into the conference, aside from the learning opportunities, such as Hire Our Heroes. In addition to the entire conference and expo was a partnership between Channel Partners and Hire Our Heroes USA. Hire Our Heroes USA, with support from Granite, conducted its Spring 2017 Veterans Initiative, in which 11 job-seeking veterans were hosted. Granite fulfilled by underwriting their travel, their hotel, and incidental expenses. This is a third Channel Partners event in which veteran job seekers were given access to education and networking opportunities that they wouldn't otherwise have. You know, veterans took full advantage of the offerings and gave excellent reviews thereafter. So a thumbs up to Hire Our Heroes, Granite, and Channel Partners for putting that on. So to sum it up, just an entire, entire bubble of just professionalism, education, and opportunity to business.
Any final thoughts you'd like to add?
No, just want to say that next year's event will be held in Vegas again. The 2018 Channel Partners Conference and Expo will be held April 17th to the 20th at the Venetian.
All right, I'm sure we'll be talking about this a little bit more on the show. Chaz, thank you very much. Chaz Wellington, our reporter from Las Vegas. This is User Friendly. If you have any questions about the channel conference, jump on our website, userfriendlyshow.com. You can email Chaz there or follow us on social media, One User Friendly on both Facebook and Twitter. We'll be back after the break.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is a slam-bang, in-your-face space adventure. It's one of those films that comes along once in a while, like maybe the first Guardians movie, that reminds us of why we love movies in theaters so much. It finds Guardians Peter Quill, Gamora, Drax, Rocket, and Baby Groot idolized as heroes and adored by all. They're hired by the genetically engineered and highly advanced Sovereigns. It's beneath the Sovereigns' dignity to exert force to rid the planet of a monster threatening its power supply. While battling the beast, the larcenous Rocket can't resist and steals invaluable batteries that power the power supply. What's ironic is the Guardians' compensation for ridding the planet of the monster is the release of Gamora's sister Nebula, who's been jailed for attempting to steal those very same batteries. Naturally, the Sovereigns take offense and give chase. In serious danger of being destroyed, Quill and crew are rescued by Ego. He's a man who not only claims to be a god, but who says he's Quill's long-lost father. Ego takes them to a planet that he's built and to safety. Or is it? Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista star with Bradley Cooper and Vin Diesel, who do the voices of Rocket and Baby Groot. Now, while new characters are added, the real fun comes from the wonderful interaction of the original cast. They toss off rapid-fire one-liners that'll have you in stitches. Miss one, don't worry, another one is soon sent flying. And it is impossible not to absolutely adore Baby Groot. Adding to the fun is the always impossible not to love Kurt Russell as Quill's nearly omnipotent dad. The chemistry he has with Pratt and the rest of the cast is terrific. And Sylvester Stallone and the always fun Marvel maestro Stan Lee do cameos. Guardians is directed by James Gunn, who did the first film. He co-writes this one with 10 others. Now, usually 10 writers is a kiss of death, but here it leads to a perfect blend of humor, action, and out-of-this-world special effects. Catch this one in 3D if you can. Rarely are sequels close to as good as the original. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is the exception. This is a blast from the opening sequences to the last of three worth waiting for outtakes at the end of the credits. My only complaint? Normally, sequels from movies destined to become a series get here much quicker. When a concept is this good, almost 3 years is just too long to wait. Hopefully, we won't have to wait that long for Volume 3.
I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you're in love with me.
Welcome back to User Friendly. UserFriendlyShow.com online, One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. Check us out, get involved, follow us, let us know what you want to hear on the show. I'm really excited about our guest today from The Real Word Sound, and he is going to be joining us here to tell us a little bit about his music, about what nerdcore rap actually is, and then the other side of what he does too, which is a nonprofit that actually brings individuals that wouldn't be able to otherwise get involved in music to see how music is produced and to be able to produce their own material, which I think is absolutely incredible. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So if you would want to start out, tell us a little bit about your background and what you do.
So my background is that actually I started off working with a lot of businesses. I used to work for Verizon and Comcast and a lot of sales. But then I always grew up doing music. And so one day, once I got laid off, I ended up happened to meet Del the fucking Homo Sapien as our manager and still my mentor today, Buku One. Made a good friend with them. And when I got laid off, like, well, you know, you do play bass, you learn the music business. How about you come out on tour with us? So I toured with them throughout the U.S., a little bit through Canada. You know, being an assistant manager, you know, assistant board manager, and also two backup bass player. And also, and then while I was underneath the tutelage, I started rapping and writing on my own. And through that, I ended up starting out kind of like getting noticed by Ubisoft. And I did a song for them back in 2012-2013 called Take Me to E3. And that opened up a lot more doors for me since then.
Well, that's amazing. I know our host from San Jose, Warkey, was the one that let us listen to some of your work initially. And we thought it was just incredible. And I know you do a venue called Nerdcore. Can you tell us a little bit, what is Nerdcore?
Sure. Nerdcore, pretty much, it is the love of anything nerdum or fandom and using that in your music. So a lot of music is very, like, you know, based around, like, comic books, superheroes, anime, and video games, and I always implement that into my raps, my rhymes, because hip-hop, when it first actually started off, a lot of your famous rappers are nerds. Like, working with Dell, I learned a lot that even rappers' names stem from, like, you know, nerdum, like DJ Green Lantern, Jean Grey, Dave Banner, aka, you know, it's very similar to Bruce Banner, you know. So the nerdum has always been there within hip hop. This is just more like being very loud and vocal about it, and then really focusing your music around that whole, like, scene.
Wow. So what are some of the projects you're working on now?
Right now, I'm currently working on my long overdue, it's not called March Madness 3.
All right.
I said, like, it was, like, you know, because I've been less, but I did that almost every March. I would do, like, kind of like a nerdum-based theme project. But around 2015, I dropped a Taco Tour and a March Madness 2 featuring, like, Nerdcore superstar Megaran. That also opened up more doors. So I've been touring a lot this past 2 years, doing some Southwest, Bands Warped Tour last year. That I never chance to finish up my album. And so that's why it's doing great with one new album. So right now I'm working on a new one called Rap Nerd Rising, being co-produced by a good friend and amazing Sacramento artist named Philharmonic.
Oh, wow.
So that one is, we're aiming to have that one done by the fall. So I'm, like, you know, trying to focus on getting this album officially done.
right. So, all right, I'm going to just actually throw this at you. What is your website if someone wants to go check out your work?
Sure. My website is darealwordsound.com, and that's DarealWordsound, darealwordsound.com.
Okay. And we'll go ahead and put that out on our social media too. So for anybody that's listening to go ahead and look that up. Now, I hear you're doing some upcoming events, and you're doing a show at, if I'm saying this right, FanimeCon?
Yeah, I have two big shows coming up, Intergalactic Expo, which is on the 21st, and then FanimeCon, which is going to be on the 27th. I'm hosting the Nerdcore Cypher with some other, like, local, like, Nerdcore hip-hop artists, like Double Dragon, Life, Forcey the Kid, the Shogunate, and then, which is going to be from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m., and I produced all the beats for that one. And then on Sunday, after the whole FanimeCon kind of comes to an end around 6 p.m., we're hosting a big after-party, and it's free, 21 and up, over at the Caravan Lounge, and we got the special guest headliners to be the Super Soul Bros.
Okay.
So they're going to be coming out and rocking with us too.
And the dates are in May, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then since we're a little bit more than just local, what city?
Okay, sure. The Intergalactic one is in Sacramento, and FanimeCon is in San Jose.
Okay, Sacramento and San Jose. And again, I'm sure the information's on your website to be able to get the details,
mm-hmm.
in case anybody missed writing it down here. So, That'll be great.
Yeah.
And I know we're going to have a few samples coming up here, too, of your work, and I can't wait to hear that. But I also know that you do a lot of work beyond your recording, community work and that type of thing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, sure. Like, I've been very privileged and honored, like, to give, you know, really get back to my community. I work with an organization called Today's Future Sound. And what we do is that we use therapeutic methods of beat making with a lot of youth. So we work with the kids within the juvenile system to, like, you know, very, like continuation schools and also public schools and private schools, showing kids how, you know, beat making and recording is a professional lifestyle. And then one of the cool parts is that at the end of every, like, you know, towards the winter break or summer break, the kids actually get to take home an actual physical CD of their own self-produced music.
Oh, wow.
So we take them through the whole process of how to make the beat, how to record, if they want to rap or sing. You know, I use my Kyotica Eyeball and my Ableton beat pads because we're locally sponsored by them. And I put a lot of stuff up. and the kids like go to they have fun. They go to town, they learn the math, the science, and it's crazy how a lot of kids don't understand how much science really goes into making music. Like my background in school was electrical engineering and also accounting. And now here I am doing music, so but it still all applies.
I think that sounds incredible. And it is amazing how much work goes in. Music is an art, just like anything else. And you listen to it and that type of thing, but it just to actually create and have an opportunity for people that wouldn't otherwise be able to be exposed to, that's incredible. How does someone find out more information on that if they want to?
Sure. If we are a nonprofit, so they want to even like donate or have us come out to their school or location, they can go to todaysfuturesound.org. Todays, T-O-D-Y-S, futuresound.org, all one word.
Okay. We'll also put that out on the social media. And I think this absolutely sounds incredible. So, well, listen, is there anything else you'd like to throw in there?
Oh, man. Right now, just pretty much just looking forward to seeing everybody at the Intergalactic Expo and at FanimeCon. And please feel free to add me on any social media platform, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat. I do follow that, and I always love engaging with my fans. That's just, you know, like I'm a nerd too, so we can even talk about the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie. There's a lot you can talk about that one for.
Okay, that would be. In fact, we just saw that yesterday, so that's a topic in of itself.
Oh, nice.
It's no spoilers here yet, other than I just say go see the movie.
No spoilers.
It's worth it though. It's worth it though. So, listen, if you're interested, we'd love to have you back after the show, maybe for a little bit longer,
yes.
And we can talk some more details about that. Maybe even have you come down to the studio and see if you can show me how to make music. If you can, you're a genius.
That'd be awesome.
So, Thank you so much, and thank you for being on the show, and we will talk to you soon. Good luck at your concerts. We can't wait to see you.
Thank you so much. Definitely, I'll be seeing you guys real soon as well.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back from the break, we're going to have some good information on pet tech, a multi-billion-dollar industry, see what's out there and what kind of the latest, greatest things are. Check out our guest, TheRealWordSound.com. TheRealWordSound.com. We'll be putting that out on our social media. And if you don't know what that is, that's One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly. userfriendlyshow.com. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. Get online, get involved. Our website actually has a cool function where you can go and submit your story idea, and maybe even get onto the show. At the very least, maybe something we can use. Let us know what you want us to talk about. That's how we put our content together. So our next topic today, I'm going to go ahead and throw the mic over to Gretchen.
Our next topic is pet technology. And some years ago, they started putting these microchips into pets so that when you lost them, you could easily find them. The vets or animal control could scan the animal and there would be the information about the pet and who owned it and they could be returned. Well, apparently they're using some of this technology to create other products that assist pets. And I know of a certain pet owner who's had a bit of trouble with his kitties, and he wanted to keep their food separated. Bill, can you tell us a little bit about SureFeed?
I don't know what pet owner you're talking about. My kitties are perfect most of the time. Anyway, yes, actually, and let's go into the technology basis a little bit of how this works. So the microchips that have been placed in chips or in pets for a while that Gretchen has been talking about uses what's called RFID technology. And what that is that the device itself doesn't have to have a power source, but what happens is you have a transmitter that bounces energy off of the microchip and then it returns a number. And then that number is a serial number, which is used to identify the specific pet. Now, we've seen RFID technology in many things from armbands at concerts to open the door, the locks on your door at your office. So the SurePet system is actually kind of a unique new twist on this technology. It's a product that comes out of Europe, and we actually are going to have an unboxing video, I think, on the video podcast that will be coming up in June. So if you want to laugh at us a little bit, check on that, because it was a very interesting experience to try and put that thing together. But what you have is a device that is basically a food bowl with a door on top of it. And the door is operated by a motor, opens and closes by the onboard computer. And what happens is when your pet steps into the range of the sensor, it reads the number off of their microchip. And if the number off the microchip is correct, it opens the door and they can eat the food. If it's the other cat that is a little white piglet that doesn't seem to want to eat her food, which is a special diet, but wants to eat his all the time, she can come up to it and it'll just sit there and look at her. And it's kind of funny. She'll sit and paw at the top of it and try to get it to work because she sees it work for him, but it just simply does not open.
Well, and the basis for this technology was originally for pet doors.
Pet doors.
Yeah. So you'd install the pet door, put the, at the time, a tag on the cat's collar, and when the cat got close enough to the door, the magnet would let the door open. So your cat could run in, but whatever it was chasing her wouldn't be able to get through the door because the door would seal.
So you wouldn't get raccoons in your house?
No raccoons. Aww. Or stray dogs or all those other things, because the door would lock behind the cat.
So that's actually a very important thing to have just for the safety of your animal.
Absolutely.
And the unit actually did come with a tag. So if you don't have a microchip in your cat, and I think there is a version of this for dogs as well. So if you don't have a microchip in your pet, you can actually put the tag on their collar and it will accomplish the same thing.
Yeah, classic.
So, Gretchen, why don't you tell us a little bit about the unboxing process?
Well, if you remember from the video, we certainly had a bit of a time pulling it apart. The device seems to be really sturdy, nicely made. It looks like it's easy to clean. You could probably tell us a bit more about that. And the lid, it's clear. So the animal, or the kitty in this case, can see that there's food available. And then when they come up close, the lid folds in half and reveals open the food. And it's kind of cool.
Well, it's kind of fun to watch. And I know one of the issues that I've had with this is training the cat that's supposed to get into there. He's a rescue that showed up on a friend's backyard step. Yeah, for a few months. It took a little bit of a challenge to trap him, and ultimately we didn't. He's a very smart kitty in that sense. He would be able to climb in the trap, figure out how it works, steal the food, but not actually trigger it. And then finally one day it had enough of being outside and just let us put him in a carrier. So he won the battle. I mean, when it comes right down
to
it,
he's really smart.
We never trap the cat, but he definitely won the battle, and then we brought him in and took him to the local humane society just make sure someone wasn't missing their kitty, and they went through and checked him out for health and all that kind of stuff and then brought him home. But he is a rescue and he's been outside for a long time. So one of the first issues that I had with it is he was scared to go under. There's a thing that he has to crawl under that's actually where the chip reader is to be able to get to the food. And I think this looked a lot like the trap, so he was very, very suspicious of that. And when you're first setting it up to train him, you leave it open so that he can get in and just get to it. So we got through that. And then when we turned it on, the sound of the motor caused him to jump back 10 feet. And what would happen is it would stay open for 30 seconds after the pet backs out of it. And he would jump back, and then slowly come forward. And the unit was open, so then he'd be able to eat his food. And then he'd back out, and then it would close. And the other cat's sitting there watching this intently. Now, on the side of the food bowl, it also has some clear plastic panels so that she can see it, but she can't get to it. So by the time she would get around, it would be closed, and then she would complain. But it actually did work and does work quite well. And the reason why this was important to me is the other cat is on a special diet. She had to have a surgery a couple of years ago and has had some health issues, so that we have to have her on this special food, which is very good for her and not good for him. And the other way around is that if she eats regular cat food, the condition she had can actually come back. So we want to avoid that. Now, of course, she wants to eat both and seems to want to get into the food that she's not supposed to first.
Well, she is a small black hole.
Yes, absolutely. She is. She's actually a little dear. I've had her since she was a kitten, and she's never known anything but a big soft bed and I think might be just a little bit spoiled, but...
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Sarcasm,
she's not spoiled.
Sarcasm.
Yeah, we're holding up the sarcasm sign right now.
But you know what? She's earned it. She's a beautiful little fur baby. But we do have to have some controls in place so that we don't want her to get sick again. And this is something that has really come in to be extraordinarily useful in that respect. Now, the setup of the device, which was another part of this that was interesting, I do recommend reading the manual. It seems like that does have a purpose for being there, at least in the case of this, because what you have to do is you do have to pair it to the right cat while at the same time not accidentally pairing it to the wrong one. So the first thing I did was to pair it to the included thing that would go on the collar just to see how it would work and get used to it opening and closing. And then what you do is there's a button on the back that is pairing mode. So we put the one kitty away in another room so that she couldn't get in, and then turned it on to pairing mode and just left it until he stepped into it. Now, it's very easy to use. There's a green light that you can see from a distance that flashes and then comes on solid when it's connected so that you know that it is. So that process wasn't terribly difficult. It was just getting him to use it afterwards. And it also has manual controls. You can leave it open or leave it closed if you want to and that type of a thing. And if you do accidentally get the wrong cat paired to it, there is a way to reset it. We didn't have to do that, fortunately. But the manual does talk about that, too. So that is something I think I'm sure people have experienced.
But, Bill, real men don't read instructions.
Yeah, well, that seemed to be the case here until I couldn't figure out how it worked.
Well, that cat's pretty smart. Didn't you tell me he was adjusting the water level in the water fountain?
Yeah, I should post some of these videos on the website. In fact, I think I will this summer. We have another bit of cat tech, which is a cat fountain that filters and cycles their water. And, of course, the kitties here are not spoiled. I don't know why anyone would think that. But he doesn't like the water flow. And there's a lever in there that turns it up and down, and he'll actually come in, look at it, push the lever to where he wants it, and then drinks the water after that. It is the funniest thing to watch.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, actually.
So, you know, genius cat, what can I say?
He opens doors. What do you want?
Yeah, all the way around there. It's been interesting, but it turned out for a rescue kitty especially to just really work out. He's turned out to be a great little guy, a great little friend. But he does know his way around things, sometimes better than we do. It's a little bit interesting to watch. But these gadgets that are out there actually make a lot of sense for being able to handle these things. The pet feeder, the SureFeed feeder, is available on Amazon for about $140. It's also available at a lot of local brick-and-mortar retailers. I think we still have those, right?
Yeah, a couple.
Okay. So if you still have an actual store, you can probably pick it up there. And the device works quite well for being able to maintain the separation. I may end up actually doing two so that her food is also in her own bowl and then they won't feel excluded. But at the end of the day, this has been really a nice piece of technology. It's something that's really helping out, and it's something that's actually really contributing to their health and making my life easier. So we'll actually talk a little bit more about pet tech on down the road here too. So some of these new gadgets come out, there's as much stuff for our pets as there is for us. And it's kind of fun to review a few of these things. So SureFeeder, available on Amazon for about $130. Check it out. Something that you probably really can use, especially if you need to separate the food. This is User Friendly. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to User Friendly, userfriendlyshow.com, one User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter. Joining me now is Bill Snodgrass with his video game review. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill.
So what do you have for us?
Well, today I actually wanted to cover more of a genre that's seen a little bit of a renaissance recently, and that's the point-and-click adventure games. Now, some people might remember these from back in the day. Lucasfilms, or LucasArts, the subsidiary of Lucasfilms, created a number of these back in the day, such as Maniac Mansion and Full Throttle and things like that. Speaking of Full Throttle, that's been one of the ones that's come out recently as a remastered version. Now, I just played it on PS4 and really had a good time with that one. They also recently released a remaster of Day of the Tentacle. Now, a lot of people are going to remember these, the nostalgia of it. You know, they're very classic games. They're humorous. They're unique. There's also been a couple of good ones that have come out recently that are newer. The creators, a lot of those that worked with LucasArts, actually created one called Thimbleweed Park. So it takes a lot of that lore and such from back in that time. And in fact, one of the puzzles in there actually requires a amount of knowledge of the 1980s and early 90s, which is really kind of an interesting throwback for somebody like me. Now, the other one that's come out was A Night in the Woods. This one is a little bit different. It doesn't follow that old, I mean, it's still point and click to an extent, but it didn't follow the standards and the humor and things like that. There was still humor in it, but it really did tell a story very well. Now, it was an indie developed one, and you can find it online. Just look at Night in the Woods. You can find a number of playthroughs, you know, people playing that on YouTube. If you want to just check it out. Same with Thimbleweed Park. And again, like I said, that's been a lot of nostalgia about those older games. Now, the company Double Fine, which some people may remember for building or creating the game Brutal Legend with Jack Black, one of my personal favorite games, created or has taken over doing these remasters of these old LucasArts games. So I'm not sure which ones they're going to be coming out with in the future or not, but they've done very well with redoing these. They took graphics and updated them, brought them into a little bit more what the cartoon idea of what they were. Now, I'm not saying that these games don't suffer from a few glitches here and there, like any game, but they've done really well in holding both the integrity and the vision, I think, of those original games. I played both, of course, Day of the Tentacle, which is a classic sequel to the game Maniac Mansion, which some people may have played on PC and some people may have played on the original Nintendo, such as myself. And I really appreciate getting the chance to play these games without, you know, having to find a DOS box or use an emulator to try and get them to work. And you can pick up, I believe, Day of the Tentacle for, I want to say, between $15 and $20 on PlayStation Store. I know they had a sale here recently for Full Throttle remastered for $15. And they're not very long games. I mean, have you ever played any of these adventure games, Bill?
Back a long time ago. I haven't really seen the new versions of them yet, but I'll check them out now.
Well, I mean, it seemed like back when you played them back then, you know, they would take days to play through. And maybe that's just the difference, is I'm used to some of these. But they're not very long. I'll admit that. You know, you're looking at a good evening playing Full Throttle. You're probably going to run into a few times where you might need to look a walkthrough up, which is a very common thing with these games.
Right.
So that's where they all sit. So if you're looking for something different, I would suggest trying these remakes or even the newer ones, such as Thimbleweed Park or A Night in the Woods.
All right. Well, that sounds great. And we'll go ahead and post the names of the games onto the social media. Everybody can check them out. And it's kind of nice that you're starting to see some of these older games available for the new platforms, because the new games are great, but the old ones are great too.
Yes, they are.
So, all right, Bill, well, thank you so much. This is User Friendly. We'll be back after the break.
Welcome back. This is User Friendly. UserFriendlyShow.com online, one User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter. It's been a great show today. Our guest, I think, is just incredible. But being able to produce music is something that I've always wanted to learn how to do, and I've just never seemed to have had a musical note in my body. So I really respect the artists that are able to do that. My co-hosts both have produced music in their time, and it's just something that I hope someday to be able to learn, and it's one of my, let's just say, bucket list goals. But it's also so cool that he actually participates in these nonprofit programs to bring music to people that wouldn't otherwise have it. So thank you for being on the show. Next week, we are going to have our lightsaber review that we talked about earlier. We also have another special guest, and I will talk a little bit more about that next week, but from the Snake River Comic Con. She's going to come on and tell us about this new convention she's putting together, a very unique approach, which I think is going to be absolutely incredible to see. It's in an area that they haven't had a Comic Con for a while, or I think at all. So it's going to be something new up there in Idaho, and she's going to give us a lot of detail on it and tell you how to get more information and what you need to do to be able to attend the con. So until next week, this is User Friendly, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly is produced by User Friendly Media Group, Inc. Copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Music by XX, used under license. For details, visit our website at userfriendlyshow.com.